President Raisi tells his Russian counterpart that Iran will give a more forceful response to any fresh Israeli attack on Iranian interests. Israel steps up strikes on different parts of the Gaza Strip amid a worsening humanitarian and health crisis in the besieged territory. And the UN says it's gravely concerned about escalating violence in the occupied West Bank, demanding Israeli occupation forces to stop supporting settler attacks on Palestinians. World News, broadcast from Tehran. With me, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Iran's president has stressed Tehran's position that it will give a more forceful response to any fresh Israeli attack against Iran's interests. Ebrahim Raisi made a comment in a phone conversation with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. He hailed Russia's support for Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel. Raisi denounced the West's opposition to the attack and urged the U.S. and its allies to stop supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza if they want to de-escalate tensions. For his part, Putin hailed Iran's move against Israel as the best possible response to its aggression against the Iranian embassy in Syria. He said Iran is one of the pillars of regional security and stability and slammed destabilizing moves by the U.S. and its allies in the region. Now, all hypersonic missiles fired by the IRGC have hit their designated targets in Israel, marking the first time Iran's employed such weapons against real targets. Sources have informed Press TV that the Israeli regime and its supporters failed to intercept any of those missiles that were fired alongside drones, ballistic and cruise missiles during the retaliatory operation against Israel. Iran is one of the few countries possessing the technology to produce hypersonic missiles. They can travel at stunning speeds and hit their targets with great precision. Iran's hypersonic missiles are highly maneuverable, enabling them to have an unpredictable flight path to confuse enemies' missile shields. The IRGC says that tracking Iran's hypersonic missiles is impossible. Now, Iran's Operation True Promise was a retaliation for the Israeli regime's terrorist attack on Iran's embassy in Syria, and it was the first time that Iran used a variety of military assets, including drones and missiles, to hit intended targets with pinpoint accuracy. Let's take a look at Iran's military prowess and why the operation was successful.
Iran's Operation True Promise was a significant counterattack that proved successful in a host of arenas, especially the military one. Now, this is while Israel is not only downplaying the efficiency of this operation, but it is falsely reporting that most of the incoming missiles and drones were intercepted. But that is not exactly the case. The multiple drone and missile attacks were preceded by a series of cyber attacks on the Zionist regime's power grid and radar systems. Now, the Zionist regime's radars were under a hack attack, which forced the closure of the airspace over occupied territories. Now, the hack also interrupted the coalition between the Israeli air defense systems and their American counterparts. Well, four rounds of drone and missile attacks were executed at 11 p.m. local time by the IRGC. Now, the first wave included dozens of Shahed 136 kamikaze drones, about 100 units of Delta wing-shaped, low-observable and low-signature loitering munitions with a range of 2,000 kilometers and a speed of about 200 kilometers per hour. Now, that carried a warhead of 50 kilograms. Well, after the first wave, three more wave attacks followed at intervals of about half an hour, and it is estimated that a total of 318 drones and missiles were launched. Keep in mind that this operation is the largest drone attack in Iran's history. Well, the numbers certainly prove that. Now, next came the launch of a series of cruise and ballistic missiles, accompanied by simultaneous drone and missile strikes by the Axis of Resistance, groups from Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. Well, the types of missiles are speculated to be Kheba, Shikan ballistic missile with a range of over 1,400 kilometers and a half a ton warhead. And the unthinkable became a reality when Iran unveiled the production of hypersonic missiles at the end of 2023, a more advanced version of the Fatah hypersonic missile. No one, well, would have guessed that they would be using it in a counterattack operation just 5 months later. And all hypersonic missiles did hit their designated targets, marking the first time Iran employed such weapons against real targets. It was reported that at least seven were used in this operation, which hit the Nevatim Air Base located in the Negev Desert. It hosts the F-35 planes used in the terrorist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Well, another base in the Negev Desert was also hit. The Ramon Air Base was target of multiple missiles, leaving a trail of destruction. Well, this post speaks volumes. It said that 12 countries participated in the operation to protect Israel. There were 10 actually, including more than 170 fighter jets. Just 250 defense missiles were launched from our ships, but more than 60% of the missiles hit the targets. Who are the Iranian engineers? Again, pointing to Iran's military might. Well, Iran's military posture has now changed when it comes to the Israeli regime. Major General Hossein Salami, the commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, IRGC, has said, from now on, if the Zionist regime targets any of our personnel, properties, and civilians, we will not hesitate to retaliate from our own lands.
The Iranian Army's ground force commander has elaborated on the reasons for Iran's recent response to the Israeli aggression against its embassy in Syria. General Haidari made the comments in a presser addressing the recent military operation against Israel. Here's an excerpt from his comments.
The armed forces of our country as a whole bear the responsibility to safeguard the territorial integrity and sovereignty of the Islamic Republic. The sentence I mentioned is an explicit provision within the Constitution addressed to the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, the recent event could be regarded as a unique taboo-breaking move by our armed forces. It was a taboo-breaking move accompanied by authority and power. It has now turned into a norm under the leadership of the leader of the Islamic Revolution. What norm? The norm to which the esteemed leader of the revolution had previously alluded, stating that the era of hit and run is over. What does this mean? It means that the time has passed when a country could commit aggression against Iran and escape the consequences, feeling it could strike and run. Now, with the action taken on Sunday night, the words of the leader have come true. So, when did we take action? When our soil was invaded. The embassy and consulate of any country anywhere in the world constitutes a part of that country's soil. Therefore, when an adversary allows itself to violate the sovereignty of an embassy or consulate, it means it has violated the soil of that country, and the mission of the armed forces is to protect the territorial integrity of that country. Hence, a decisive response was necessary, and this response was the will of our great nation, and if repeated, the response will be even more severe.
Iranian University lecturer Mohammad Mehrandi says that Iran has indicated its done away with its policy of strategic patience with Israel, and from now on it will respond forcefully to any anti-Iran operation by the regime.
On the one hand, the Iranians were telling the Israelis that we can hit you. But on the other hand, the Iranians carried out a very inexpensive intelligence gathering operation, and the Israelis and the Americans took the bait, spent huge amounts of money, and effectively showed their hand. The Iranians have stated that they've changed the equation and that from now on, strategic patience will be put aside. So in the past, Israelis would target Iranian officers in past years who were fighting against ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the other extremist groups that were working with the Israelis and NATO in Syria. Mm-hmm. But the Iranians wouldn't respond because the focus was on stabilizing Syria. They didn't want to expand the war. More recently, the Israelis started again to attack Iranian officers in Syria. Again, the Iranians showed strategic patience because they wanted the focus to remain on the genocide in Gaza. They've also said that from now on, whenever you strike Iranians, wherever they may be, or Iranian assets, wherever they may be, we will strike back from Iran. So if the Israelis make the stupid move, they will effectively fall into Iran's trap, because Iran will carry out an attack tenfold of what we saw a couple of days ago, but with advanced technology. And they will not be telling the Israelis or the Americans or the international community or anyone days beforehand what's going to happen. They will figure out what happened after it has tragedy has befallen upon them.
Now let's move to the Gaza Strip, where more deaths and destruction have been reported on day 193 of the Israeli genocidal war on the Palestinian territory. At least 11 children have been killed in a drone attack on Al-Maghazi refugee camp. 8 Palestinians were also killed in Israeli bombing of central Gaza City. 5 civilians lost their lives in the southern city of Rafah. The death toll since October 7th now stands at over 33,800, mainly women and children. The number of the wounded has also moved up to 76,500. Hospitals in Gaza are lack enough medicine equipment to treat the wounded. The health system has almost collapsed totally, and the regime has also used famine as a weapon of war. Some 2 million people in Gaza are struggling to gain access to food amid restrictions on humanitarian aid. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has issued a statement in reaction to reports about the Israeli regime's torturing of dozens of Palestinian detainees before releasing them on Monday.
The horrific testimonies documented by a large number of Palestinians recently released by the Zionist occupation army, including children as young as 12 years old, which confirmed their exposure to various types of torture, ill treatment, and deprivation of health care, is an affirmation of the brutality of this criminal army and the violations it commits against defenseless civilians within the framework of war crimes and genocide against our people in the Gaza Strip.
Now, Gaza's Crossings Authority released testimonies of some 150 recently freed Palestinian detainees uncovering their painful ordeals during detention. It called on international human rights bodies to take action to reveal the fate of thousands of Palestinians kidnapped during Israeli raids across the Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, UN investigators say that Israel is blocking a probe into Hamas's October 7th operation against the regime by obstructing access to the witnesses of the attack. That according to Navi Pillay, former UN rights chief, who now chairs the probe team that's also investigating the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza. Another investigator says that Israel is not only not cooperating with them, but it's actively obstructing their efforts to receive evidence from witnesses. The member of the inquiry team also said that some of the digital evidence of the incident has also disappeared from the internet. Time now for the news review section. Now, the United Nations condemns the Israeli occupation force for taking part in Israeli settler raids and says that the regime, as an occupying power, must ensure public safety in the West Bank.
The Israeli security forces must immediately end their active participation in and support for settler attacks on Palestinians. Israeli authorities must instead prevent further attacks, including by bringing those responsible to account. Those reasonably suspected of criminal acts, including murder or other unlawful killings, must be brought to justice through a judicial process that complies with international human rights standards and follows a prompt, impartial, independent, effective, transparent investigation.
The UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani held Israel accountable for the raids and urged the regime to stop unlawful use of force against Palestinians by the IOF. She also pointed out the killing of 4 Palestinians, including a child, in the latest raid by armed Israeli settlers and forces. The UN official also mentioned that the Palestinian communities in the territory are at imminent risk of being forcibly transferred from their homes and land. At least 468 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces or settlers across the West Bank since the regime began the genocidal war on Gaza. I'm now inviting guests to discuss this a bit more and get some more information. So our correspondent Ramala Mona Kendall is with us. Good to see you. Now let's begin with an update by Mona and Ramala. Tell us about the latest in the West Bank.
Four Palestinians were shot and killed by Israeli settlers in the last few days across the occupied West Bank yesterday at night. Israeli settlers, over 50 Israeli settlers, raided the village of Aqraba near Nablus and attacked Palestinians, villagers on their own land, and they were backed by Israeli forces, according to the residents of Aqraba. The Israeli forces were standing there. They were at the scene. They were just watching idly without doing anything. And after the Israeli settlers, we are speaking about the majority of those settlers were armed. They opened fire at the Palestinians. They killed two and wounded three. The Israeli forces prevented ambulances to reach those Palestinians, and then they confiscated the bodies of the two Palestinians, and later they informed the Palestinian authority that two Palestinians were shot and killed, or they were killed in Aqraba during clashes with the settlers. And we are saying that Palestinians were killed by Israeli settlers. The Israeli forces confiscated their bodies, and thus it's very clear, according to the Palestinian communities and the Palestinians, and as the United Nations have said, the Israeli forces are sometimes supporting and backing the Israeli settlers by doing nothing and encouraging some other times the settlers. There was a video released recently showing clearly in the village of Alim Ghayyar, group of Israeli settlers surrounded by Israeli forces. They arrived at a car shop, let's say. The forces were speaking to the settlers, and then the settlers stormed this shop, and they torched a vehicle there. This was clear in the surveillance cameras, and then the soldiers, as if they were telling the settlers to quick and to leave the area. And in addition to all this, in the last few days, every time the settlers were storming Palestinian villages, the Israeli forces were imposing curfew, were closing all the entrances of the Palestinian villages and preventing anyone to enter or to leave these areas.
Appreciate your comments. Mona Kantila, correspondent in Ramallah. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime prison authorities are refusing to return the body of author and activist Walid Daqa to his family following his death in detention on April 7th. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Daqa had spent the majority of his life in Israeli custody and was one of the longest-serving Palestinian prisoners. He had been terminally ill with cancer. Israeli regime authorities abducted Daqa when he was 24 years old in March 1986 for allegedly participating in armed resistance as a member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a leftist political party. He was sentenced to life in prison, which was later reduced to 37 years. He completed his 37-year sentence in March 2023. However, in 2018, his detention was extended by 2 years by Israeli regime authorities, citing allegations of smuggling phones into his cell. His new release date had been scheduled for March 2025. Daqa hailed from the Palestinian city of Baqa al-Gharbiya, in the occupied territories. He authored multiple books in prison. A Palestinian woman named Sana Salama visited Daqa for an interview, and they subsequently became a couple. In 1999, after persistent efforts with the prison authorities, Daqa and Salama managed to wed in a legendary celebration at Ascalon Prison in southern occupied territories called Israel. They were joined by a select of few of Daqa's fellow prisoners, as well as some of their families and friends. Israeli regime prison authorities denied the couple visits despite their prolonged struggle for the right. Despite repeated campaigns by human rights organizations urging Daqa's immediate release, the Zionist regime insisted on keeping Daqa imprisoned even as he was fighting a rare case of bone marrow cancer. The Palestinian Human Rights Organizations Council, PHROC, which includes a number of groups, sent an urgent appeal last year to the UN Special Procedures, a body that handles such cases, calling for Daqa's release. The council said Daqa was facing imminent deteriorating health conditions due to Israeli prison services' policy of deliberate medical neglect. Amnesty International similarly called for his release on humanitarian grounds to allow him to spend his remaining time with his family. Amnesty is now calling on Israel to release Daqa's body. Erika Juvena Rosas, Amnesty International Senior Director for Research, Advocacy, Policy and Campaign, said, "Even on his deathbed, Israeli authorities continue to display chilling levels of cruelty against Walid Daqa and his family, not only denying him adequate medical treatment and suitable food, but also preventing him from saying a final goodbye to his wife Sana Salama and their 4-year-old daughter Milad. Salama could not embrace her dying husband one last time before he passed. The Zionist regime authorities must release Daqa's body to his family without delay in order to give him a peaceful and dignified burial and allow them to mourn his death without intimidation." Israeli occupation forces, however, stormed and dismantled the funeral tent where people gathered to mourn Daqa. They abducted some of his relatives. Large numbers of Israeli regime forces also raided the home of Daqa's family. Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir publicly endorsed these brutal actions. The minister gave kudos to the Israeli police responsible for dismantling Daqa's funeral tent. The minister wrote on X, formerly Twitter, "We are not crying tonight over the death of Daqa." He expressed regret that Daqa died a supposedly natural death, preferring that he get the death penalty. Daqa's death marks the 15th Palestinian fatality in Israeli detention since October 7, 2023, with the Palestinian Prisoners Club attributing these deaths to torture, incarceration, starvation, and medical negligence. Meanwhile, Palestinians abducted from Gaza and detained in a prison camp are subjected to routine amputations due to severe cuff injuries. This disturbing revelation comes from an Israeli field doctor who had worked at the Sereh Taiman facility, an army base situated between Beersheba and Gaza in the southern Negev region. Israeli regime authorities abducted Palestinians from Gaza before transferring them to other prisons. The army camp has been turned into a Guantanamo-like prison, according to the human rights group Euromed Human Rights Monitor. The group added detainees there are held in extreme conditions akin to open-air chicken cages without access to food or drink for long periods of time. Just this week, two prisoners had their legs amputated due to handcuff injuries, which unfortunately is a routine event, the physician wrote in a letter to Israeli leaders at the time, which was reported by newspaper Haaretz. Palestinian detainees at Sereh Taiman camp are handcuffed 24 hours a day, the newspaper Haaretz reported. This policy came into effect after a medical staffer was allegedly attacked. Handcuffing, which the physician says is on all four limbs, is causing severe injuries that require repeated surgical interventions. Detainees constantly handcuffed are fed through straws and are forced to defecate in diapers. Israeli regime authorities had initially employed plastic handcuffs, but have now replaced them with metal ones. At least one detainee had their hand amputated due to prolonged wear of plastic handcuffs, according to three sources cited by the Israeli newspaper. An Israeli regime military spokesperson declared that no criminal offense was found during an investigation, deciding not to initiate a military police inquiry. Even when patients undergo major operations, they never remain in the hospital for more than a few hours and are transported back to Sereh Taiman regardless of post-operative observation. Typically, only one doctor is available at the detention camp, often an orthopedist or other doctors. The physician wrote, this ends in complications and sometimes even in the patient's death. Euromed Monitor interviewed Palestinians from Gaza who had been abducted by Israeli regime forces and reported being subjected to abuse, beatings, threats, stress positions, and other forms of mistreatment that the group says amount to torture. One detainee told the human rights group, recounting being moved from one location to another, every new place had a unique method of torture. He said he was struck in the head by an officer, adding that the severe cold prevented him from sleeping. Another detainee described being forced to completely undress and enduring severe beatings with rocks and rifle butts. He also stated that Israeli regime authorities threatened to rape her family. A female detainee shared a similar account, saying she was forced to undress. She told Euromed Monitor, every time I was stripped with the female soldiers putting their hands on me while male soldiers occasionally made rude comments. Nearly 1,900 Palestinians have been abducted from Gaza and are still held in the Zionist regime prisons as of this month. This figure does not include those detained at the Sereh Taiman facility, which typically accommodates 600 to 800 individuals.
The Ocean of Dua.
Illallah, A'udhu billah min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss. ومن علي بحسن إجابتك وأقلني عثرتي. Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. وَجْعَلْ لِسَانِي بِذِكْرِكَ لَهِجَ. O Allah, make my tongue remember you constantly. وَقَلْبِي بِحُبِّكَ مُتَيَّمَا. Make my heart enthralled by your love. وَمُنَّ عَلَيَّ بِحُسْنِ إِجَابَتِكَ. Be gracious to me by answering me favorably. وَقِلْنِي عَثْرَتِي وَغْفِرْ زَلَّتِي. Nullify my slips, forgive me my lapses. فَإِنَّكَ قَضَيْتَ عَلَىٰ عِبَادِكَ بِعِبَادَتِكَ وَأَمَرْتَهُمْ بِدُعَائِكَ. You have decreed your worship for your servants. You commanded them to supplicate you. وَضَمِنْتَ لَهُمُ الْإِجَابَةِ. You assured them that they would be answered. The Holy Quran, dear listeners, has stated, وَإِذَا سَأَلَكَ عِبَادِي عَنِّي فَإِنِّي قَرِيبٌ. أُجِيبُ دَعْوَةَ الدَّاعِ إِذَا دَعَانِ. When my servants ask you concerning me, فَإِنِّي قَرِيبٌ, then I am near. أُجِيبُ دَعْوَةَ الدَّاعِ, I answer the prayer of the supplicant when he calls on me. أُدْعُونِي أَسْتَجِبْ لَكُمْ, the Holy Quran says, call upon me and I will answer you. So this should be kept in mind, that not any prayer is guaranteed to be accepted. We have had detailed discussions over the concept of supplications and the conditions, requisites, and prerequisites of the acceptance of supplications. But in short version, only that prayer of a supplicant whose features are mentioned in the Holy Quran and traditions are going to be accepted. So, when this part of the supplication of Kumail says, وَضَمِنْتَ لَهُمُ الْإِجَابَةِ, and you have assured them that they would be answered, we have to know this by other traditions and the verses of the Holy Quran, that only special kinds of worshippings, special kinds of supplications are going to be accepted.
Mercy, protect me and cause my tongue to accentuate your remembrance, and my heart filled with your love, and be gracious to me by your gracious response, and cause my evils to appear fewer, and forgive me my errors.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So we have to know that not all types of worshipping and supplications are going to be answered. Someone might call upon Allah weepingly and ask Him all the world's wealth, kingdom over the world, and everlasting life, a beauty more than that of Joseph's, a voice sweeter than that of David's, or bravery more than that of Imam Ali alayhi salam. He might even ask Allah to fulfill any good or evil prayer he says about other people. Such supplications, dear listeners, are void of necessary conditions, so they are not guaranteed to be accepted. The Almighty does not accept these. The knowing, righteous, and loving servants have the necessary conditions, and their prayers are based on the goodness of this world and hereafter. The type of supplication we need, the type of thing we need for from the Almighty Allah to accept, is what is based on the goodness of this world and especially hereafter. If our prayer is answered in the world, we must thank Allah. And if it is not answered here, we should not become upset. Rather, we have to stay patient like the righteous servants of the Almighty Allah are. We have to wait till the suitable time for the acceptance of our prayers. It has been narrated that prayer is the weapon of the prophets and the believer. Prayer changes a strong fate, removes calamities, and cures diseases. So, the necessary conditions for the acceptance of prayers have been mentioned in the Imam's traditions as sincerity in deeds, knowing that everything is in Allah's hands. Even recognition of Almighty Allah and knowing Him in the first place is one of the most important conditions of acceptance of supplications. Performing obligatory deeds, having purified heart, and telling the truth are other conditions. Even, it has been mentioned in the traditions of the Imams that eating lawful meals are and paying people's rights, presence and tenderness of the heart, and beginning the prayer with Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, is among those conditions. Also, confessing to the sins, beseeching and weeping, putting one's face onto the ground, performing two units of prayer, having certainty of acceptance, praying for others before oneself, avoiding indecent prayers, and praying in privacy and having hope of the acceptance of prayer are among those conditions. One of the most important of them, however, is this hope of the acceptance of prayer. If the supplication and the supplicant have the necessary conditions, the prayer would most surely be answered. And this is what Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam in this part of the Kumail supplication says, وَضَمِنْتَ لَهُمُ الْإِجَابَ, and you assured them that they would be answered. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close, close to you through Allah, oh Allah, be with me.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Journalists in Western corporate and so-called public media, whether it is the BBC, CBC, CNN, the New York Times, or the Washington Post, know exactly what is happening in Gaza. They know there is a genocide because they see the same images the rest of us see, filmed by brave Palestinian journalists and ordinary citizens. They all know what the judges of the International Court of Justice decided. And yet, these truths are kept out of US and European media. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Mark Esper, current CNN Global Affairs analyst and former defense secretary for President Donald Trump, lasting all of 16 months in the position, presented erroneous information last week to CNN viewers. On February 29th, CNN anchor John Berman asked him about what has become known as the Flower Bag Massacre. He said, "We've just seen in the reporting out of Gaza maybe 100 people killed while waiting for aid. The humanitarian situation in Gaza, how much of a threat is that to hopes for peace there, to hopes for Israel to achieve what they want to achieve?" Setting aside Berman's apparent frustration at the starvation interfering with the Zionist regime's devastating onslaught in Gaza, Esper's answer bears close examination. Esper acknowledged that Israel has a responsibility under international humanitarian law to provide food and aid to the civilians in Gaza. But It was downhill from there. He quickly shifted to pure speculation, propaganda for the American viewer. He claimed, "There are concerns, of course, have been for many years, that food aid coming in is rife with you. You know, arms and ammunition for Hamas, and that maybe Hamas is also pilfering it. Reports, early reports from this incident are maybe that that was happening, and then Israel opened fire or maybe a stampede happened. It's not clear what Esper is trying to convey to the viewer. Is he saying that the resistance group Hamas was trying to smuggle in arms and ammunition when the Zionist regime forces opened fire and killed 112 Palestinians while injuring another 760, according to the Gaza Health Ministry? If so, there has been zero evidence presented of arms smuggling in that convoy. The Zionist regime, after all, is checking everything trucked into Gaza. Alternatively, he may only be suggesting that the resistance group Hamas was pilfering the aid. Similarly, no evidence of Hamas taking that aid has been presented. As for desperate people being trampled along with deadly Israeli regime fire, the occupying power starving Palestinians would be responsible for both. Esper, unsurprisingly, says nothing about the Zionist regime's genocidal policies in the Gaza Strip. Perhaps he doesn't believe it, but as an analyst, he should note the International Court of Justice views this as a genocide. There is not a word from him in the op-ed about the consequences of this policy for over 12,500 Palestinian children killed by the Israeli regime attack. Nor does he mention the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians facing starvation, with 15 Palestinian children now dead of dehydration and malnutrition, as even CNN is hesitantly reporting. Esper further fails to raise the importance of prosecuting the Zionist regime perpetrators of this genocide. Of course, he says nothing about dismantling the apartheid Israeli regime and replacing it with a regime securing equal rights for all, much as he was done in Jim Crow American South and apartheid South Africa. Deeper detail about the unequal reality facing Palestinians is not to be routinely broached at CNN. Instead, CNN has presented calls of "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free" as anti-Semitic. Presumably, CNN also views equal rights in the context of one state as anti-Semitic. The New York Times, often quick to present the Zionist regime's position, did not entirely side with Esper's biased speculation about the convoy. They presented the views of witnesses, health officials, and the Zionist regime's military. Readers were advised, quote, "Witnesses described extensive shooting by Israeli forces amid widespread panic, and doctors at Gazan hospitals said that most of those killed and injured were by gunfire. Others were crushed under trucks, frantically trying to escape." Witnesses said the Gazan health officials called it a massacre, unquote. The authors, Aaron Boxerman and Adam Raskin, who months ago was critical of Al Jazeera and its Gaza bureau chief, Wael Dahdu, just days after Israeli fire killed his wife, 16-year-old son, and 6-year-old daughter, did dutifully note that the Zionist regime military had claimed its troops fired after individuals in the crowd approached them in a manner which endangered them. They write that the military attributed most of the deaths to a crush as hungry Palestinians sought to seize the cargo. A different New York Times article by Heba Yazbek and Boxer Man cited Israeli military spokesperson Daniel Hagari as claiming Israeli troops shot in the air before firing only in the face of danger when the mob moved in a manner which endangered them. A CNN.com article cites Hagari as saying the tanks that were there to secure the convoy sees the Gazan being trampled and cautiously tries to disperse the mob with a few warning shots, unquote. The article also quotes Hagari as stating, I think as a military man, they were backing up securely, risking their own lives, not shooting at the mob, unquote. Esper's ongoing affinity for a genocidal apartheid army, he hasn't tweeted out any acknowledgement of error, is made all the more clear by the sort of rhetoric coming from the Zionist regime's military spokesperson, who, on at least three occasions, dismisses starving people as a mob. For Esper, it's a stampede. That same morning of February 29th, CNN anchor Kate Bouldon interviewed New York Governor Katie Hochul. Bouldon didn't ask one question about Hochul's genocidal comment earlier in the month to the United Jewish Appeal Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York, Incorporation. The CNN anchor also did not respond to the Electronic Intifada's inquiry about the absence of a question about Hochul's pushing genocide in Gaza. Hochul had declared, if Canada someday ever attacked Buffalo, I'm sorry, my friends, there would be no Canada the next day. Her implicit endorsement of a genocide wiping out Gaza and Canada was met with laughter rather than outrage from the audience attending the event. Hochul then added, clearly speaking of Gaza and her Canada, hypothetical, quote, that's a natural reaction. You have a right to defend yourself and to make sure it never happens again, unquote. She issued an apology the next day, but the damage was done. Hochul admitted to an inappropriate analogy, and according to New York Times, she apologized for her poor choice of words. She did not apologize to the Palestinian children her words helped to kill. Touting genocide is now casually dismissed as poor word choice, and starving people are a mob. American and Zionist officials have a lot to answer for if the International Court of Justice takes up its job responsibly.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
President Raisi tells his Russian counterpart that Iran will give him more